Radio Prague News. The U.S. ambassador to Prague says a two-year time frame in proposed changes to U.S. visa policy cannot be guaranteed. Civic Democrat Przemysl Sobotka has been re-elected chairman of the Senate, and tests have confirmed the Czech Republic's 25th case of BSE or mad cow disease. U.S. President George W. Bush, speaking with President Václav Klaus at the NATO summit underway in Riga, has reportedly reiterated conviction that visa requirements for Czechs traveling to the U.S. will eventually be waived. Speaking to reporters after the brief meeting, Czech President Václav Klaus said President Bush anticipated intense debate in Congress, which will have the final word. While Czech Foreign Minister Alexander Vondra has put 2 years as an estimate for changes in visa policy, some U.S. officials are being more cautious. The U.S. ambassador to Prague, Richard Graeber, on Wednesday reacted by suggesting that while 2 years was perhaps a good estimate, the time frame couldn't be guaranteed. Przemysl Sobotka of the right-of-center Civic Democrats has been re-elected to the post of Senate chairman. On Wednesday, 74 out of 77 senators present supported him in a secret ballot. It was the highest support for any chairman in the upper house's 10-year history. Mr. Sobotka's party has a majority in the Senate, holding 41 of 81 seats. Regarding his continuing on in the post, Mr. Sobotka said one of his priorities was to increase the Senate's role in foreign policy. Wednesday's lower house session had to be interrupted after a row broke out between MPs of the two strongest parties. The deputies were in their first reading of laws and contracts when the Social Democrats and Civic Democrats clashed over a proposal to fully dissolve the Ministry of Information Technology in 2007. The war of words was sparked off by a remark made by former Health Minister and Social Democrat MP David Rath. He accused Civic Democrat Interior Minister Ivan Langer of being particularly eager to take over one of the IT ministry's projects because he would benefit from it personally. And tests have confirmed the Czech Republic's 25th case of BSE, or mad cow disease. The state veterinary authority reported on Wednesday that the infected cow was from a farm near Semily in northeast Bohemia. Some 200 cows will have to be slaughtered as a precautionary measure. I'm Dita Asiru, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, broadcasting in English worldwide. I'm Jan Wellinger. In today's program, we talk to new U.S. Ambassador Richard Graeber about proposed changes in U.S. visa policy that could impact the Czechs. The Czech Republic says no to a beer tax hike proposed in Brussels. And we look at a new exhibition on art from the 14th to 18th century. Don't go away. On Tuesday, U.S. President George W. Bush announced plans to modify his country's visa waiver program, which would raise the number of countries whose citizens can enter the United States without a visa. This move could affect the Czech Republic, allowing its citizens to travel to the U.S. on business or pleasure for 90 days without going through the arduous process of obtaining a visa. Emily Udell has the report.
President Bush announced an initiative to modify the country's visa waiver program in a statement that could mean citizens of new European Union countries will soon be able to enter the U.S. without visas. The announcement was made on a trip to Estonia and Latvia, two EU members that, like the Czech Republic, could be affected by a change in U.S. visa policy. Bush's statement addresses an issue that has long rankled Czech citizens and has become one of the sore spots in bilateral relations between the U.S. and the Czech Republic. Czech officials have long decried the U.S. policy that requires Czechs to apply for visas for any travel to the United States. Americans can enter the Czech Republic for 90 days without visas. U.S. Ambassador to the Czech Republic, Richard Graeber.
From the perspective of the Czechs, the position that I so often hear is, we the Czechs are with you in Iraq, we're with you in Afghanistan, we're promoting democracy around the world, yet United States citizens don't need a visa to come to this country, but Czechs need a visa to go to the United States.
Most long-standing EU member states are not required to apply for visas to go to the U.S., but newer members like the Czech Republic are still required to do so. According to current U.S. policy, visa rejections need to be below 3% for a 2-year period before free visa relations will be considered. The percentage of applications from Czech citizens that were rejected in the past 10 years has been hovering around 10% annually. Bush's statement said modifications to the current visa waiver policy would be made alongside efforts to heighten U.S. border security. Ambassador Graber.
From the United States perspective, security is a big issue, and the world changed after September 11th, and security became a bigger issue than it's ever been in any time in the history of our country. So I think what we're trying to do and what you're starting to see is an effort to marry the two concepts. Yes, let's find a way to get countries such as the Czech Republic in visa waiver as soon as we possibly can, but at the same time, make sure that we are taking into account the security of the United States.
In his statement, Bush said modern technology could heighten security by more accurately tracking travelers entering and leaving the country. Some recent advances on the visa issue have already been made in the Czech Republic. Last week, Ambassador Graber and Czech Foreign Minister Alexander Vondra announced a new measure that will streamline the visa process for employees of companies belonging to the American Commercial Chamber, a 13-year-old organization that promotes trade relations between the U.S. and the Czech Republic. The new process will benefit approximately 450 companies. On Czech TV, after Bush's Tuesday announcement, Mr. Vondra projected a timeline of approximately 2 years to fully balance U.S.-Czech visa relations.
It's basically a political statement which casts light on the need to change the law. It's not a question of weeks or even months, but I think that 1 or 2 years would be a realistic estimate.
Ambassador Graber did not estimate a time frame for implementing the new measure because the United States Congress has to approve any change in visa law, but he does see Bush's statement as a definite step forward in the process.
The president made a significant announcement today. He announced that he was willing to work with Congress to establish some flexibility in the existing visa waiver law, to provide modifications to the visa law that would focus on security. So it's a somewhat different focus than it's been in the past. There's a long way to go on this. Congress has to change the law. Of course, any time a law is changed in the United States, that's a process. It's not something that happens instantly or overnight. But from the perspective of the Czechs, I think it has to be looked at as good news.
And that was the new U.S. Ambassador to Prague, Richard Graber, talking to Emily Udell in that report. Now, the Czech Republic has blocked an EU Commission proposal that would have seen a 4.5% hike on taxes on alcohol, including beer. That is something that would no doubt have a major impact on the Czech Republic as a major producer and consumer. Here, beer is considered a national product. On Tuesday, Finance Minister Vlastimil Tlustý indicated the decision to veto wasn't just about raising taxes alone, but overall fairness, since, for example, wine producers' products are largely exempt. He said that the proposed hike left beer brewers at a disadvantage. And earlier, I spoke to Jan Veselý, the director of the Czech Beer and Malt Association, to get his view on the matter.
We are very glad it has happened. First of all, it's not just because of excise taxes on beer themselves. It's that the question of that distortion in excise taxes that exists for decades, distortion between beer and wine, has been put on the table finally. And consequently, the answer was when part of the project is not increase of excise taxes for wine, no excise increase of excise taxes for beer will be agreed.
Some people have countered that the 4.5 increase which was far lower than the original 31% being proposed by the European Commission, wouldn't have affected the Czech Republic anyway.
Yes, 4.5 is that very small amount, but as I said, the purpose of all the disputation is the distortion. So any increase, if it's not connected with increase of wine, is wrong, even small increase. And have in mind that all the proposal was complex. It means 4.5% increase just now, and then automatic increase every 3 years, which in accumulation would be much more than originally proposed 31%.
Would you agree with Mr. Lustig's words that it truly is a national product?
You know, as France is automatically connected with wine, it's their national pride, their national history and heritage. The same position is of beer in our culture.
And I was speaking there to Jan Veselý. He's the director of the Czech Beer and Malt Association, discussing the Czech no to the proposed beer tax hike. Silesia, A Pearl in the Bohemian Crown, is a new exhibition that is currently underway in Prague. As Dita Asiedu reports, paintings, sculptures, drawings, and prints illustrate the artistic relations among Silesia, Bohemia, and Moravia from the 14th to the 18th century.
Through the Wallenstein Riding School proves that the region of Silesia can pride itself with a rich cultural tradition. The 400 works exhibited here represent three different periods. The first part of the exhibition looks at the golden age of Luxembourg rule and is devoted to the flourishing development of the Gothic style under the reign of the Luxembourg dynasty. From works by artists of Bohemian origin to donations of Bohemian art to Silesian monasteries and convents, this section has many jewels, says Viet Vilnas, the main curator.
For instance, famous altar piece from Vichy Brod, southern Bohemia, or the rests of this altar piece, after many, many years, are now together because this collection is today divided between Prague and Budapest. And the Polish colleagues lent for this exhibition some very interesting objects of art, for instance, sculptures of Pieta, Virgin Mary mourning for the dead Christ, 14th century sculptures of Madonnas on Lion, which is specifically Silesian iconographical topic, and the highlight of the Gothic part of the exhibition is a monumental stone sculpture group from Olomouc showing Christ on the Mount of Olives, the Agony in the Garden.
The second part of the exhibition features the glamour of Rudolfine Prague and the relation between artists in Prague and in Poland's Wrocław. Art in Silesia was strongly influenced by the works of mannerist artists around the Prague court of Rudolf II. One such example is
a sculpture by the most famous Rudolfinian artist Adrien de Vries, a man from the Netherlands who was a pupil of famous Gian Bologna in Florence at the court of Medici. And this sculpture on loan from National Museum in Warsaw is the sculpture of Christ, which was originally placed at the tombstone of a man called Adam Hannewald in the village of Żarowina near to Wrocław, Silesia.
One of my personal favorites is a painting exhibited in the third section, looking at the Baroque flamboyance of monasteries and palaces. The painting depicts men in boats pulling the body of St. John of Nepomuk out of the Vltava River. Legend has it that King Wenceslas IV had the patron saint of Bohemia thrown off the bridge because he refused to share a secret told to him by the king's wife. But, as we hear from curator Viet Vilnas, the painting is also a very helpful and unusual illustration.
Painting itself descends from 18th century, but it shows how this part of Prague looked in the half of 17th century, between the years 1648 and 1651. And this is why it is very interesting, because it's the first-class iconographical source showing how this part of Prague looked before great Baroqueization of the buildings in the very close area of right bank Charles Bridge Tower.
Silesia, a pearl in the Bohemian crown, three periods of flourishing artistic contacts, will be on show at Prague's Wallenstein Writing School until April the 8th. So there's plenty time for you to visit. But those of you who will not be able to make it can tune into this week's Arts, in which I tour the exhibition with curator Vít Vilnas.
And it's now time for our main feature this day. The House of Culture in the Moravian town of Broskeov is one of the country's best examples of the Art Nouveau style. Built by the famous architect Jan Kokera, it celebrates its 99th birthday this Friday. The director of the House of Culture, Alena Špurná, shows Dida Asiedu around the newly renovated structure in today's spotlight.
Jan Kokera, nowadays, he's a renowned Art Nouveau architect, and his pieces of architecture are everywhere in the middle of Europe, in Prague, in Vienna. So the experts, or those who understand architect, they appreciate him very much. When he was building the National House in Prostov, he was only 33, young man, very, very charming, I must say, because the period pictures show him, you know, in the head, and really a lovely person. So it was rather daring to get him for such a big project, and it turned to be a very good choice.
Could you describe this building to our listeners a little bit? What makes it so special?
Well, I think the atmosphere is beautiful. Some people say the theater is the core of the building, and it was made like a fairy tale. And I hope the atmosphere still is rather emotional, specific, and just the style, the Art Nouveau style, which is on the ceilings, in the chandeliers, in the lights especially, in the colors. It is a harmonious building.
Okay, if we could just walk through this building a little bit. We're now standing in the green room, then there is a red room, there is also a blue room. Do you know what they were used for in the early 20th century?
Yes, we are in the social part of the building. So it was meant for socializing, and it, still it is. It's the same, actually, the concept. The whole building had three different parts. The social part, this one, then downstairs there are restaurant and a cafe, and the main part of the building was the theater itself. So these three parts. And, well, if I say socializing, and I should specify it a little bit, then I would say everything, seminars, balls, family evenings.
The town of Prostějov had a very rich cultural life at the end of the 19th century and the early 20th century.
That's it. It was a flourishing town, and it was, I would say, in a size, it was one of the biggest towns in Moravia at that time of the century, and industry and other things were also rich, flourishing, and really prosperous. So culture as well, and there was no media, nothing like television, radio, and so on. So people loved theater, and there were moving groups of actors, and they loved coming here into the town because the conditions for making plays were very good, but good at various pubs and inns around the town. Whereas after 1907, when the building, the National House, was built, now they were a really luxurious place to give their plays. So they loved even more to come.
I would say the darkest period for this building was the Second World War. How did it suffer in those years?
In 1942, the Germans decided to change the building according to their own vision, taste, and style. And they started to rebuild the theater itself. So Art Nouveau decorations, stucco decorations, many glasses, lights, and everything they took away. They didn't destroy it. They stored it in the attic and so on. But they changed the style from the Art Nouveau decorative and, as I have said, the fairy tale style into rather simple and pure or rather blunt style or whatever. Yes. So this was their idea. There wasn't any other reason, but, you know, the war, it's also maybe especially about culture fighting, you know, so they wanted to have their own culture in here.
If we could walk over to the theater. It sounds like somebody's already rehearsing.
Adjusting our sound system, yes, we are adjusting it because after half a year of not working at all, it needs renovations and definitely many testing, as you can hear now, just now.
It looks like the sound system is working very well.
Yes, exactly. It'll be day by day full of performances and concerts until Christmas, and we have to pack our season into, you know, fewer days, and so it's going to be really difficult for us to manage all the performances and so on.
If we could go back actually to the time when the National Theatre came back into the hands of the Czechs after the Germans left, what condition was it in?
After the Second World War, you know, as every building, probably bigger building, it was dilapidated, and in the 50s there was no time to repair it because there were other priorities like schools and you know, all the basics which are necessary to be repaired and renovated and so on. So finally in 1956 they decided to do the necessary works because all the plaster and all the piping needed this as a kind of basic repairs. And so then they started in 1956. They planned it for 4 years, but finally it was almost 14 years as it, you know, turned into a very difficult thing. So renovations after every, I would say, 15 years until these days. But now we are focusing also on interiors, not only on the basics, but also on something more.
If we could walk over down this corridor to one of two hidden chambers, which are extremely unique. Each of them is attached to a balcony that looks out over the stage of the theater. Is this what life was like 100 years ago?
I think so, yes. I think the mayor of the town used to come here into this chamber with some VIPs, and before the play they had some talks, some wine, some coffee, I guess, maybe some important negotiations. Definitely this is very cozy, and it, again, I think the atmosphere here is noble and somehow mystic.
There are a few armchairs, there's a fireplace.
Yes, exactly.
And a very large mirror, which I will not go near. Is this the original furniture that was here then?
Yes, but of course it was renovated. Also, all the furniture which is in this building, Jan Kotěra, the architect of the building, planned and designed himself. I think it's not easy to explain what happened with this corridor and why I'm so happy standing here under this high ceiling. But during the German renovations or repairs in 1942, the Germans decided to make the ceilings lower, and they actually hid the stucco decorations, they took away the chandeliers, and now it's all back and in full beauty. And I really think that many people, Prostějov people, the citizens, will be absolutely, absolutely shocked to see it.
Now, during this renovation work, you found out that it took only a year and a half to actually build this building.
Yes, that's true. It was a record, I think. It was really short time.
The building is going to turn 100 next year. How are you going to celebrate that birthday?
There will be lots of different occasions, concerts, exhibitions, and so on. So we will have a calendar of these during the year, and actually the climax or the ending itself will be on the 1st of December 2007. It'll be a big concert of a Philharmonic Orchestra with our singer Eva Urbanova, who comes to Prostějov.
You've been listening to Spotlight with Dida Asiedu. And just a quick reminder of some of the other stories we looked at this day. We spoke to U.S. Ambassador Richard Graeber about proposed changes in U.S. visa policy. And we looked at the Czech no to a beer tax hike proposal from Brussels. You can look up those stories on the internet. Our website is www.radio.cz/en. For myself and for the whole Radio Prague team, though, it's now time to say goodbye from the Czech capital.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Sept heures, 7h27, 5930, 7345, Europe. 8h30, 8h57, 9860, 11600, Europe. Dix-sept heures trente, 17h57, 5930, 15710, Europe, Afrique centrale. 19h30, 19h57, 5930, 9430, Europe, Afrique. 23h, 23h27, 5930, 7345, Amérique du Nord. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.